Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
And it's another goal! Wonderfully worked again, and it's Mikel Antonio again. And how about this for a turnaround from 1-0 down to 2-1 up, just like that.
Well, I'll tell you what, this is all about the delivery from Benrahma.
Hello and welcome to UIN's The West Ham Podcast from The Athletic. I'm Sam Delaney. I'm joined by The Athletic's West Ham correspondent, Rashane Thomas. As always, breaking news, lads. We're massive again. Right? It's true that for a fortnight, we weren't sure if we were still massive. We thought we might just be downgrading to really, really big. But after a display of what can only be described as Samba Calypso football, against Burnley last night, we are in some ways bigger than ever. Guess what? Rashane Thomas was actually there in Burnley watching the game, but he's come back to tell the tale. What everyone wants to know, first off, Rashane, is what was the hotel like in Burnley? I was very worried about you. Last week you said, I think it was a 2-star that The Athletic were booking you into, and I felt very bad about that for you. How was it?
You know what? It was really, really nice. Really nice. Holiday Inn Express, Burnley.
Listen, oh, it was a Holiday Inn Express. Yeah, oh, Express. Wow. That's not bad, mate. Yeah. Not and because it's an Express, this is one of those things where you just check in and out and you don't have to even see another human being, right?
You know what? Funny enough, when I got to the hotel, I saw the Burnley team. I saw
in the
Burnley
hotel?
Team pass. In the hotel, funny enough.
What? Like, hang on a minute. James. Burnley, honestly, for a start, Burnley. They're at home. If you're at home, but you have to assemble at a hotel before the game for whatever reason, then, okay, that's fair. But then Sean Dyche goes, I want you all in the Holiday Inn Express. No wonder bloody James Tarkowski wanted to move to West Ham. At least we'd, unbelievable.
Because you know what, right? I got to the car park. I seen like Ferraris, Range Rovers. I was thinking, all right, this is a bit different.
Yeah.
I'm used to seeing like Nissan, Ford Focus, BMW every now and then. So yeah, I get in. I mean, I see the team. I see like James Tarkowski. I seen Phil Barnes, everyone, Ashley Barnes, all of them. So I think they're having a meeting.
A lot. You should have gone and put something in their lasagna, mate, just to be on the safe side. I have once seen West Ham in a hotel, and that was when I went to watch us play Palermo in Sicily in 2006 in the Europa League, or maybe it was still the UEFA Cup, I can't remember. And it was a brilliant away trip. I've probably talked about it before, because it's probably my, even though we lost 3-0, it's probably my favourite ever away game, right? And me and a mate, we must have been flush because we decided to check into the best hotel we could find in Palermo. Anyway, we got there, and this was still in the days when I used to drink. And we got there and got obviously shit-faced, I believe is the word, and staggered back to the hotel. I think this was the day, maybe we arrived on the day of the game. We staggered back into hotel. We got there first thing in the morning, started drinking straight away, got into the hotel sort of early afternoon. And as we staggered up to the lift to get to our rooms, sort of like thinking, we'll have a little kip before we go off to the stadium tonight, trying to sleep a bit of it off before we start again. The lift doors open. And Alan Pardew is staring right back at us. And also in the lift, I think, are like Hayden Mullins and Nigel Riococca. And I'm pissed and I've gone, "Bart!" like that to him straight away. And he's gone, "Hello, fellas." And I went, "We're here for the game." He just went, "Oh, you don't say." I thought, what did I say that for? He doesn't. I mean, I'm pretty sure by the my sunburnt, you know, my very pale yet sunburnt face, right? And, you know, the way I was dressed and the fact that I was paralytic at about 3 in the afternoon probably indicated to him that I wasn't a local.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the only time I've seen the Hammers in a hotel. But I tell you another good one. This is complete tangent. We will get on to talking about the Burnley game. This is the best one ever, right? My brother, for a while, lived in Italy, in Perugia, which is a town like in Umbria, right? And while he was there, he sort of adopted the local team, Perugia, and used to go and see them. But my Italian team have always been Lazio, right? Because I've got relatives in Rome who follow Lazio. So I've always gone to Lazio games since I was a kid. Anyway, it was Lazio, Perugia, in Perugia. So we said, right, let's go over for a little weekend. It's our two, me and my brother, and our two Italian games playing each other. So we stay in, like, Perugia's a small town. I have one decent hotel. We stay night in a hotel, right? My brother's got his son with him. He's about 2. We go down for breakfast in the morning. And I thought, I'm sure that's Sven-Goran Eriksson. Now, this was the Lazio team of the early noughties, which Sven-Goran Eriksson was manager of, who won Serie A, right? And the team, I've looked around and I'm hungover again, but I've looked over bit by bit. It started dawning me, oh my God, right? This is the lineup: Nesta, Veron, Sala, you know, the Chilean forward, Sala Salas, I think his name was, Nedved, right? Inzaghi. Like, this was Diego Simeone, the lot, mate. Lombardo. This was like, I mean, this Lazio team, the early noughties, because they were briefly very rich. They did a bit of a sort of a Chelsea thing. But it was like an all-star 11. It was incredible. And they sat all around us. And my little nephew runs over. And Salah starts, like, mucking around, playing with him a little bit, teasing him. Wicked. Oh, I was made up, mate. I mean, to a man like you, rubbing shoulders every day with, you know, footballing superstars, you're like, yeah, big deal, mate. But to me, that's my greatest ever football team hotel moment.
No, that's incredible. I'm surprised you didn't learn Italian after that, mate. You know what I mean?
Well, I know a little bit of Italian. I've got Italian family, so I know a little bit, but I don't think many of them were Italian, to be fair. I mean, maybe out of that list I just gave you, there was like Nesta and Simone Inzaghi were about the only two Italians in the team, if I remember correctly.
That's a dream team right there, to be fair. That's an absolute dream team, pal.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Hello, listeners. Sorry to interrupt your show, but we've got a small favour to ask. We're currently doing a bit of a survey to find out more about you, your podcast listening habits, and the sort of adverts that are most relevant to you. If you feel like helping, please head to surveymonkey.com/r/athleticaudiouk. That's pretty catchy, so I'll say it one more time. surveymonkey.com/r/athleticaudiouk. Thank you.
So, last night, tell me first what you thought when you saw the lineup. Did you know prior to the lineup being announced that we were going to be missing Noble and Ogbonna?
We knew beforehand that there'll be no Noble, but we didn't know Ogbonna would be absent and that Antonio would be back. So they're the two that sort of caught us by surprise, as in like the media. So to be fair, right, even before the match, right, I'm not sure how much you could see it on TV, but Sam, it was chucking it down in Birmingham.
Oh yeah, you couldn't see it that much. It was like that in London, yeah.
It was like, from now on, I'll always be grateful to have been in London, because Burnley, I can't be experienced for every day. No way can I be experienced for every day. It was that bad. Honestly, like it was terrible. But yeah, we didn't know about Ogbonna will be absent and Tony will be back. But what a performance! As you touched on it,
what did you think when you saw it? I mean, that is a lineup that I'm pretty certain we have not named those players in the same team, as in the midfield and attack this season at all. And I don't think that we've named even that formation, really, when you look at the amount of... I mean, I don't think many people, until the game got underway, could work out who was playing where, because there were so many attacking players. Certainly Sky couldn't, because I think they had it as Fornals playing in a more withdrawn role with Souček, and they had Lanzini out on the wing. Yeah. And it didn't turn out that way.
A few like the Burnley reporters are like, do you know what formation is? I'm like, I haven't got a clue what formation this is. I know it's an attacking team. And the last time I can remember the team being so attacking was the win against Aston Villa. Mm. I remember it was a bit similar. Benrahma started that match, Lingard, Antonio. So before the match, right, I tweeted Benrahma plus Lingard plus Antonio equals like fire emoji, because that's what I thought. I thought this is an attacking team. People are being very positive. Yes, Moyes is going through, loving his team, really good. And that first 30 minutes, Sam, my goodness. That 30 minutes was just amazing.
Unbelievable.
Breathtaking at times. Benrahma playing great. Antonio's like scoring goals. It was just brilliant football. And when we're at our best, I feel like we could be anyone. Honestly, because we're just so good. Like, we're so good.
Yeah, I mean, what I can't work out when you say that is that, like, you look at that last night and I just thought, how the game ended 2-1. That was my only disappointment, because, you know, Burnley are a good side. They're off the back. They're in good form. They're off the back of a 4-0 win against Wolves. They couldn't live with us, to coin a phrase. They could not live with us. And you're right. I couldn't really see any other team living with us when we've got that many creative players out there all playing so well. Although, funny enough, we'll get on to this, Lingard had a good game. I've not seen him have a bad game, but by his standards, he was not in our top three best players last night. But what I wonder is this, Shane, it's like, did we look that much better because we were playing Burnley, who are a good side? You know, admittedly, they are a good team. I'm not saying that they're like a small team. They've been more successful than us in the Premier League in recent years, I'd say. But Moyes doesn't pick teams like that against sides who are further up the top of the table. And also, he doesn't put us out like that. And I also just wonder whether the players have got it in them, because we've seen Benrahma against a certain level of defence looks top class. But I'm talking about his best games have been against Villa, Burnley and Leeds. And all good teams, don't get me wrong, all good teams. But when we've seen him play even one level above that, he doesn't look quite as devastating. And I just don't know whether that is because he isn't quite good enough. And that's the test of a player being exceptional, is when they can do it against all opposition. Or whether it's just his confidence, or whether when he is picked in those games, Moyes is just... maybe Moyes puts them out there with less confidence to express themselves, and he focuses more on stopping the opposition. Whereas clearly last night he must have sent them out with a kind of, lads, just go for this.
Yeah, yeah. That's two good questions. And answer to the first one, I feel like that match showed how threatening we are with pacing our team and without Noble. We all know Martin Noble's got a great setup for the club, but he just hasn't got the legs, unfortunately. And I thought Lanzini in that deeper role looks so good.
I didn't see it coming, mate.
Mate, I know people say, it's only Burnley, but still, you have to think this guy's
Burnley a good side, man.
The way he dictated play, I was like, it's just Lanzini, or am I watching like another player in disguise? Because this is just incredible. Like, he was just so confident on the ball, very calm. He had a great chance in the first half to score. Nadi went over the bar.
Yeah.
And we looked a threat. We all looked a threat on a counter-attack. And that was my main takeaway. And wherever we got the ball, we looked a threat. And as you touched on, should have scored more than two goals. But on Benrahma, right, I'm so happy for him. Because when he provided that assist for Antonio's second goal, because during matches, right, I feel like it's important as journalists to show a bit of personality. I feel like too many journalists are so serious where I try and be a bit, you know, a bit funny every now and then.
Yeah.
So when he provided
that assist... You're a bubbly character, mate. Oh, you're a bubbly, yeah. You can't stop. Don't take that away from yourself, right?
Yeah,
don't let the boring, tedious suits, right, of the sport journalism fraternity ever take that away from you or wear that down, mate.
You know, true words, Sam. True words, pal. So when Benrahma provided his assist for Antonio's second goal, I thought, you know what? You haters out there, you Benrahma haters, I'm coming for you. I'm coming for every single one of you, right? So I posted a tweet saying, Benrahma haters, where you're at with the gift of like Kevin Martin looking.
I saw it, mate. I saw it.
All right. So I thought it was funny, right? People were like saying, this is hilarious. Mate, today, right, in my DMs, what on earth are you talking about? It's only one match. He only done a couple stepovers. Oh, massive overreaction.
Are these West Ham fans?
Yeah, West Ham fans.
I mean, that to me, mate, I mean, listen, we are not Arsenal. But then again, maybe we are Arsenal. Maybe all fans are going like that now. We all love Arsenal. I cannot understand how any West Ham fan has the energy or the time or the amount of anger inside of them to spend time getting that head up about arguing with another West Ham player about another West Ham fan about how shit a West Ham player is. It's like, what part of being a West Ham supporter don't you understand? The clue's in the name, supporter, support them. I mean, I criticise players when they've had a bad game, but would I go out of my way to direct message another West Ham fan? I mean, I tend to feel a natural affinity with anyone I ever meet who's a West Ham fan. Wrongly or rightly, sometimes they might be dickheads, but for me, you'll get two, three or four extra chances with me if you support West Ham or if you've got anything to do with the club. And I just think, you know, honestly, mate, that is baffling that people have got the time to do that. It's a time thing. So it's like, I really must take it up with that bloke on Twitter that he thinks our player's good just because he played well last night.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean he's good. I'm going to have it out with this bloke so he will eventually agree with me. Well,
I know.
If you're listening, mad bloke on Twitter who hates Benrahma, say if Rushane, think it through to its best possible conclusion. Maybe Rushane ends up going, do you know what? You've made me see the error of my ways. You're right and I'm wrong. And in fact, I'm going to write an editorial in The Athletic in which I name you personally, if you don't mind, and explain how you reasoned with me on Twitter and eventually made me see that despite the fact Benrahma had a great game last night, I was wrong to describe him as good because ultimately he is not good. He just had a good game. How would that make you feel, madman on Twitter? Would you feel vindicated? Would you feel happier? Would you feel more fulfilled and able to live a better, more rounded life? Or would you just have to go on to the next dispute and forever feed the beast inside of you? That's Sam's thought for the day.
I appreciate the kind words, pal. I'll send you a link set in the post. But you know what, right? With Benrahma, you know what? I'll compare it to four nows. And just covering West Ham, I've sort of learned the art of being patient with players. Obviously, we all know a bad player, we see him on, like, case in points being like someone like Roberto, for example. We know he wasn't good enough to be lucky for West Ham. But with Benrahma, we saw flashes like of what he could do. It's a case of him being the chance. I use four nails as a perfect example because in his first season, we all know he struggled, but we saw signs that there's a player there.
Yeah.
He just needs time to get to the rhythm of the Premier League, his teammates. And I see that in Benrahma. I feel like this season is an experiment in a sense where Benrahma is getting used to his teammates, getting used to the pace of the Premier League, and I feel like we'll see the best of Benrahma next season.
Well, what Moyes has played him perfectly, right? He's played him perfectly. He did the same with Fornals. He did the same with Bowen. Remember, Bowen didn't get in the team straight away. I think he did after a couple of games. He assimilated a little bit quicker, but we were in a desperate situation, right, when Bowen first came in. But Benrahma, He's picked him shrewdly. I had a feeling he would pick him after two losses on the bounce and coming up against a team who I thought might pack the defence and therefore we might need a little bit more magic in attack because we couldn't rely just on the counter-attack, I had a feeling he might pick him. And I had a feeling that if he did, he'd have a good game because, like I say, against those kind of teams, he seems to be better. And I just think it's another stroke of Moyes' genius. People say, oh, I don't think Moyes rates him, but I think Moyes does rate him. And I think, because at the end of the day, Moyes signed off a £25 million transfer for him in January. It was only, you know, a couple of months ago he was doing that. He didn't have to at that point, you know. And so I think that he likes him, but he's just being smart. And he knows that a player like that, who depends so much on his skills and his flair, is going to need a lot of time to acclimatise to defenders who are, I think, significantly better defenders. In the, I think there's a big step up, isn't there?
You know, that's true. You know, that's a great point. You know what it reminds me of? It's a bit like being in school, right? And you're that student who's satisfied with getting a B, but the teacher makes you stay behind because they know you can get an A or an A star. Like, they know what you can achieve, but you're like, no, I'm fine with a B. But the teacher's like, no, you're staying behind. I know what you can do. And I feel like that's Moyes with Ben Rama because he's just not content with what he's doing right now. He knows what he can do. For example, right after the match, I asked David, obviously, great performance from Ben Rama, but what more does he need to do to get a start level on a regular basis? And he was saying he needs to improve, for example, like his decision-making. He needs to score more goals. Ben Rama yet to score so far this season. Five assists, but yet to score. Like, this is what he needs to work on. He's like, I've got faith in him. Like, I believe in this guy, but he just needs to work on a few things to get to that level.
And he's right. I mean, you know, last night he had a sensational game, but nevertheless, there were moments where he did make the wrong decision. He's just overthinking, but like people say, one goal will happen, and then after that, he'll chill out. And if he goes up a level from what we saw last night, we've got a serious player on our hands. Really serious.
He was always asking Christopher for the ball. He was linking up with Antonio. Like, he looked like a player who's like, you know what? I'm gonna seize this opportunity right now. I wanna like deliver. And I remember short of the interval, Ben Rama, he had a great chance, right, to cross it into the box. Antonio was at the far post. The cross was terrible, a terrible cross. David Moyes is like, what are you doing? Like, come on, like, you gotta do better. But I thought like that tough love approach would get the best out of Ben Rama.
I saw that. They showed that on TV, him reacting like that. And I mean, maybe it's like Moyes has done so well that now anything he does, I interpret as genius. But they commented it, the commentators mentioned it as well, the fact that even though we were playing at times really breathtaking football, I mean, there were spells in the game last night where even in the context of this season, which has been arguably our best ever Premier League season, there were passages of play that were the very best we have seen West Ham play this year. The very best, you know. Against a very tough team to play against, like Burnley. And we were absolutely like, we were keeping possession. There was one touch. Honestly, the cliche is it's like watching Brazil. But it was like that.
Yeah.
It's the style that there was times, because we had packed the team with so many technical players, it was like watching a Brazilian team. Because it's only when you see teams like that, the reason they say that is that Brazil traditionally have been one of the only teams in world football who are unafraid to put 11 technical players in the side, or at least six offensive players who are all technical, right? They're the only sort of team who have experimented with that over the year. But that's really what we had last night, and you don't often see it. And, you know, bloody hell, the doubters, all of us who doubted David Moyes, and everyone did to one extent or another, one of the main criticisms people would have had when he came in was, oh, he's negative. And maybe that was based on his time at Everton. I can't really remember now. I do remember them having good attacking players during that period, but, you know, seeing as such a sort of a pragmatic team. But I don't think there's many managers in the league who would put a team out like that was put out last night, you know. I mean, certainly managers we've had in the past would have sooner, you might say, oh, well, we picked the only 11 players we had. But, you know, Ryan Fredericks and Glenn Johnson were on the bench. Not Glenn Johnson. What's his name? Ben Johnson. They were both on the bench. They're both defensive players. He could have played them on. We've had managers in the past who would sooner have played them, those two, on the wings, you know. or played another centre back in the central defensive position, you know, something like that. But they didn't. He didn't. He stuck with it. You know, he could have played Balbuena. Balbuena was available. He could have played Balbuena and played with a back three. There was other things he could have done, but he just thought, nah, I'll just stick them all out there. Do you know what I mean? And he stuck them all out there. And what's really incredible about the way this team is coached is that they were all technical, offensively minded players, and yet they all worked their socks off, which meant if Burnley thought, well, look at this side, they've got a load of smallish, skillful players, we'll overrun them, we'll bully them. No way. Because Lanzini and Fornals were like, and Lingard always works. He always chases down every ball. But Benrahma too, all of them. Antonio, you know, is always going to work really hard to shut people down. I just can't see. I can't see Nobes. I think Nobes has done well since he's come in for Rice, but I can't see him getting back in the team now. In fact, I don't want him to. I don't want him to because Lanzini is such a different proposition. We've never really even seen him play that role before. But when it's hard when he comes off the bench for him to make an impact. And I've been very cynical about Lanzini. I've got, well, you know, one of my best mates is always, you know, we'll like be both watching the game and texting each other throughout. And he's always like, get Lanzini on it. I love Lanzini. And I go, you're obsessed with Lanzini, mate. The bloke scored a good goal against Tottenham. That's it. It's all he's done for the last few years. But last night I ate my words because he was winning the ball. He was running everywhere. But the best thing was, like you say, when he got it, he was looking up and playing positive balls forward all the time, which meant the opposition never get time to relax. And that's the problem with Noble, isn't it? The opposition sometimes get time to relax and they get time to regroup because Noble's going to hold on to the ball for too long.
Sure. And that's why, let's say, for example, like what we're on a break, it slowed down a little bit because Noble was in possession and he can't really keep up with the others. And that wasn't a thing last night with Lanzini. And after the match, you know, similar to Benrahma, I asked Moyes about Lanzini. Because the thing with Lanzini is, he never gets asked post-match. And Moyes is like, listen, we know it's been tough for Lanzini in terms of like playing time, but he was superb. He can't recall what time Lanzini lost the ball last night. And he thinks, obviously we all know Lanzini hasn't been the same player since that knee injury, but he thinks this could be like a new position for Lanzini moving forward. And I agree, because he played so well. You would have thought Lanzini had played that position for like 10 years. Listen, I know it's barely, but still, like, that's how well Lanzini performed last night. He was just so good. Like, we're watching him, it was like he rolled back the years, just in terms of being so calm, just not panicking. Like, it was so good. So let's say, right, because the thing is, it's believed that Declan Rice will be back for the game against Everton on Sunday. But let's say David Moyes wants to be a bit cautious and not put him in start 11. I'm more than happy to see Lanzini back in.
So we've mentioned Benrahma and Lanzini. I think Antonio was named man of the match on the box. And I would actually agree with that, even though we've mentioned two other players who had cracking games. I think Antonio was brilliant, not just the two goals. He was great throughout the game. And what really astonished me was he's been out for about 4 weeks and he came straight back in and he played the whole 90 minutes and he looked so sharp from the beginning to the end. And that is so weird. I mean, for a player who's been out for 4 weeks, usually you expect them to come back and either come off the bench or if they do start, do 60 to 70 minutes maximum. He absolutely, sure, he was incredible. I mean, he's like a machine, you know. So I was delighted for him. Gutted that he didn't get his hat trick because when he got the second, I thought he's nailed. At that stage, mate, I thought, right, we've just hit peak West Ham here. We're going to absolutely overrun them. We're going to win this by about 5-6 goals. It didn't turn out that way. But at that stage, I thought this is going to be like the Watford game last year. Norwich. That was it, wasn't it? Yeah, Norwich. So anyway, I mean, there's not much negative to discuss apart from, I would say, and I know people might think, oh, they've got to say something negative, but I would say that Diop, for me now, I think every game he has a wobble. And I think that our defensive woes began after Ogbonna first got injured and Diop came in. And I just think he's got great things about him. But at the moment, with a lot of competition for places in that defence when everyone's fit, I think he's always got he always seems to have at least one mistake in him in a game, you know. And I just think, I mean, for me at the moment, we'll probably bring someone in the summer. But for me at the moment, Dawson and Ogbonna are the two starters. And I love the way we played last night so much that I would hope the rest of the season we stick with 4-4-2 with Cresswell at left back.
Yeah. You know, regarding Big Summer, a lot of fans feel like we'd sign a striker, maybe another midfielder, but I still think we need to sign a young centre-half to provide competition for like Dawson and Vanna. Because hopefully, I'm hoping he'll change my mind, but I just don't think Diop is the answer right now. I really don't, because here we are, what, 1 year on, and we're still talking about the same thing as Diop, just defending, not being sharp.
I'd sell him. I'd sell him because he's young enough to still fetch a fee,
And we can get a good like profit from that. I think pretty sure we signed him for 18 or 24 million, if I'm not mistaken.
It was expensive, so but we should get a profit,
But even the match against Burnley, Sam, I just felt like, even I said it at half-time, it's good we're in front, but if Burnley were to get back in the game, it would be because of Diop. He's just so shaky with aerial battles. Even the penalty they got right, I'm blaming Diop for that because he was so hesitant in terms of clearing the ball. And then Chris Wood got across him. I'm pretty sure it was Solchak who fouled him. That could have been avoided had Diop just put his head through it, been a bit more confident. And you could tell the second half, Burnley were like, listen, let's exploit this. Let's exploit it. He's shaky. Let's use our advantage. So,
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we were lucky to get away with it because when we kept missing chances, I was certain they were going to get another really good chance. Luckily, they didn't. They didn't have their best night. But... yeah, I think that is. I worry too much when you look at Ogbonna and Dawson, especially Ogbonna. The way that Ogbonna, who I think is a classy defender, but at the same time, when he gets locked into one-on-ones or aerial battles, he also has that sort of almost like more of a traditional English way of defending, where he will be, you know, at times he'll look graceful like Rio Ferdinand, but other times it'll be like Tony Adams, and he will just stick his foot through it. He will do last ditch blocks. He'll be the bloke where you think they're nailed on to score and he'll fly from nowhere and block the shot. He gets his head on it. I mean, that kind of ugly defending is what Ogbonna's capable of, as well as the classier stuff. Whereas Diop, I don't know, when the going gets rough and a bit ugly, I just think he gets a bit wobbly.
No, I agree. I definitely agree.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Brought to your ears by The Athletic, I'm Adam Hurry, and Football Clichés is the podcast you never knew you needed. Every week, to quite unnecessary depth, we examine the words, the phrases, the accepted wisdom, the mannerisms, the habits, the gestures, the symbols, the sounds, and the smells that everyone takes for granted in football, but which really are the glorious glue that holds it all together. For example, have you ever really listened to the Football League goals roundups? I mean, really listened to them? Because they all sound pretty much like this.
Team X went into this game with just one win in their last 13, and when Team Y took the lead inside 4 minutes at Stadium Z, the home fans were probably starting to fear the worst. But Striker A had other ideas, and this game turned on its head in the space of 5 minutes midway through the second half. First, a smart finish from the edge of the box brought Team X level, and he repeated the trick on the hour mark to bring his tally for the season to 22. By now, Team X were in the mood, and although Striker A squandered a gilt-edged chance to complete his hat-trick, on-loan Dutchman winger B made it three with a curling effort from long range. Team Y's misery was compounded in stoppage time when midfielder C's late challenge on fullback D saw them reduced to 10 men. An afternoon to forget for manager E's men then, but Team X will hope they have finally turned a corner under caretaker boss manager F.
Listen to Football Clichés wherever you get your podcasts, and also ad-free when you subscribe to The Athletic.
All good stuff, generally speaking. Just wonderful to see it. And just lastly, for the old timers like me out there, when this lineup came out, it put me in mind of one game from, and I had to look it up, I couldn't remember what year it was, 1996, West Ham versus Southampton at Upton Park. 2-1 was the scoreline again. But we started with, up front, we had Paolo Futre partnered in possibly the most bizarre and unlikely forward partnership, not just in Premier League history, but what in almost world football in history. Paolo Futre started up front with Ian Dowie. And you'll struggle to find two more contrasting styles, right, in a strike partnership. But West Ham started with basically four wingers in midfield, Williamson, Slater, Hughes and Lazaridis. But in the second half, we brought on Ilie Dumitrescu and Florin Rădăcău, our two Romanian World Cup stars. And we played out this game against Southampton with Futre, Rădăcău and Dumitrescu up front. Now, in those days, we weren't used to having foreign glamour players in the from World Cups in our team. And suddenly we had three of the bastards all playing together. I wasn't at that game because I was abroad on holiday. But friends of mine who were at that game, and many West Ham fans who were at that game, speak about it to this day in hushed tones. Because I say it was the most outrageous attacking display for the last 15, 20 minutes of the game they had ever seen in their lives, right? It was absolutely sensational because Harry Redknapp had just stuffed this side with, you know, flair players. And I think that hasn't been done again till last night when Moyes went one better and played Lanzini, Fornals, Benrahma, Lingard and Antonio. And the so-called defensive midfielder was Souček, who, by the way, is our top scorer this season. It was incredible. Really incredible lineup. It paid off, and I'm delighted.
All delighted. But I'll tell you what, Sam. Listen, the last... So I've mentioned beforehand, like, how tough it is being a journalist and also a fan of West Ham, because I need to be professional, but it's just so hard. It really is. Mm. And the last 15 minutes of that game last night, so my goodness. Oh, that was tough. That was so tough because Bernie McFly has so much and I was thinking, what are you doing? Just clear the ball. Oh, mate. I'm not sure how you found it, but that was just bad experience.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched a lot of games like the recent ones where we nearly threw away our leads or did throw away at Arsenal, where it's more like being nervous about the other team looking like they're scoring. I didn't feel that nervous, not particularly nervous about Burnley scoring because it wasn't like they were bombarding us. They were trying, they were huffing and puffing. They didn't create that much. But it was more just how profligate we were being in front of goal, like the way that we were carving open opportunities almost at will, but then just not quite getting it in the back of the net. That was what was driving me mad. Yeah. But anyway, look, we got there. 3 points is 3 points. Onward to Everton. I feel very confident now. I just feel Everton will maybe be a bit of a tougher game, but they're inconsistent, aren't they, Everton? And I think our tails are up. And we beat them at Goodison, so why shouldn't we beat them at London Stadium?
For sure. I'm actually confident for the Everton match. The only match in the remaining, four fixtures that I'm a bit, is a Brighton game.
Yeah,
the only game out because they are a bogey team for whatever reason. That's the only match I'm not really confident. But yeah, Sunday definitely get a positive result against Everton. And I touched on Rice could be back for that match. So now we've got a bit of morale again following the back-to-back defeats.
And what about Masuaku and Ogbonna? Do you think they might be back?
So Moyes has asked about Ogbonna after the match. It doesn't seem likely he'll be back for the Everton game.
Right.
By Moyes' response, and imagine he'll give us an update on Friday. We still don't know yet in terms of when Masuaku will be back. So I'd imagine both will get an update on ahead of the pre-match press conference on Friday.
And just lastly, what can we look forward to reading about the Hammers this week in The Athletic?
All right, so Sam, I'm not one to name drop, right? I'm not one to name drop, but we have a big supporter of this podcast. And right. Earlier, I was fortunate enough to interview Seth Meyers, right? So, that interview should be on the site on Thursday. So, yeah, just how he became a West Ham fan, some of his favourite memories as a West Ham fan, his favourite players, which current player would have on his show, funny stories about being a West Ham fan. All, it was just a great chat. It really was.
And he's proper West Ham, isn't he? He's really like, this is not just like one of these celebs who's just an American celeb who's plucked a name out of nowhere. This bloke is fully West Ham.
Fully West Ham. And you have to remember, Sam, they're 5 hours behind. So I asked about the Newcastle game. And again, I won't reveal too much. You can read it in the piece. But he shared a hilarious story about that match. Bear in mind, it's what, 7:30 for him. So he's got to get up early to watch that. And he's similar to us. So I was like, Seth, whenever West Ham win, I'm happy. Whenever West Ham loses, I'm annoyed. So one story I can share. For the Newcastle game, right, he was like, he was just so annoyed. I was thinking, why am I annoyed? He's like, oh, I know why. Because West Ham lost.
Yeah, that's proper West Ham. I was saying to my wife last night that she knows we've been to go so many years, she sees what I'm like. I'm like, I don't get as angry as I used to when I was younger. But it does cast a shadow over my whole week when we've lost. And it was so nice to be back in winning ways again after last night. So let's all relish it. And I think there's still a chance. I've still got a feeling Chelsea are going to slip up. But let's see how it goes.
Oh, and very quickly, another piece to look out for this weekend will be a background on Thomas Souček and his journey to West Ham. I've got some great stories about potato salad. So this will be a good piece.
All about the potato salad. Wicked. Well, thanks for listening, ladies and gents. Thanks as always, Rashane. Well done on surviving Burnley. And we'll be back next week reflecting on what we hope is another victory against Everton. Until next time, come on, you Irons. And remember, ladies and gents, there's only one. Submersible!
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.